We'll be talking about that a little later on with Sammy Mockbell. But first, we have our very first guest of the day joining us on the line from Sky Sports. He's a man who is out and about and off hunting around Europe at the moment for players to talk to. But we all just know him as a very good friend of the show. Mr. Aidan McGee joining us on the line today to talk all things Manchester United and the transfer window from the north. Aidan, how are you doing today, mate? It's a pleasure to have you on the show. We haven't had you on in a long time, man. Hope you're well.
Yeah, I'm very well. Thank you, yourself.
Not too bad, man. Not too bad. A little tired after a long day of transfer watching. I'm sure it must be an absolute nightmare for someone like yourself who's completely embroiled in the carnage of deadline day.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is my third one now. And I was sent to my third different club. Yes, I went to Spurs. I was quite excited when sent there on Friday because I'd been there all week. And then I was told on Friday I'd be there on deadline day. And I just thought, well, you know, I knew that the Spurs were looking to drag out the Bale deal as long as possible. And I thought there was a good chance I'd be there when Gareth Bale announced his departure or Tottenham sort of fit to release him. But it didn't happen. It happened the previous day. And it turned out to be quite a light day at Tottenham. They'd just let a couple of loans go out in the evening to QPR. And so I was actually relieved about 8 o'clock because I was told about an hour before that I'd be flying to Belgium on a 6:40 a.m. flight from Heathrow to Brussels to track down the man of the moment, Marouane Fellaini.
Well, I suppose he's sharing the spotlight at the moment because I guess elsewhere in North London, everybody's talking about Mesut Ozil, but there is so much to talk about with this Fellaini move. And first and foremost, how's the detective work going out there in Belgium?
Yeah, we tracked him down. He didn't train today, but we tracked him down and we managed to get a shot of him somewhere. Can't say where. But we managed to get hold of him and he didn't speak, but we think he might train tomorrow. There are no injury problems. It's just that he flew over from Manchester this morning. He wasn't ready to join the team for training at 10 o'clock British Standard Time. So I think, he'll definitely be involved tomorrow. They've got a big qualifier against Scotland, and we'll hopefully get a word with him maybe tomorrow.
It'll be a pretty tired chat because it was all left very late on the deadline day yesterday. Panic from Manchester United in this move for Fellaini because they've spent a lot of money and it's their only real signing of the transfer window.
I don't think it's a gamble at all because David Moyes knows it. And he signed him before, spent £14 million on him. If you'd say that given his progress in the last 5 years, it's quite natural that you'd say that his value would double, and it hasn't even doubled. He's come in at £27 million. He's a dominant midfielder, the aggressive midfielder who's equally effective in defence and attack in the same way Roy Keane was with Manchester United and Brian Robson before that. So he fills a hole in the United team. I think he'll get plenty of minutes this season. He's going to play Champions League. He showed the United fans how much he wanted to go there by driving to Goodison to hand in the transfer request. So I don't think it's panic at all. I mean, obviously, if you're a United fan, you're going to think, well, we should have signed more players. And possibly that Moyes-Woodward axis has not proved as effective as Ferguson and Gill as yet. But it's their first window. They've not been at the club for longer than a few months. So you can't just come in and expect to master the transfer market because there's one thing working for Everton and entirely another with Manchester United. They're one of the biggest clubs in the world and they are difficult when you enter to negotiate. It's difficult when you enter negotiations because people think that, well, okay, you're the biggest club in the world, so you'll pay a price commensurate to the size of the club. So it's difficult, probably more difficult to get a good deal for Man United than it would be for Everton. So, no, I don't see it as panic. I think it's a really good signing. They will have wanted more signings than that. And they probably are guilty of dithering over a couple of deals. But overall, I think the squad was good anyway. If you were going to pinpoint one area that needs strength, you'd say centre midfield, and they look to have at least ticked that box.
I was going to say, will Fellaini be able to be that replacement for Paul Scholes? Because obviously it was bemoaned that when Scholes left, they weren't able to find somebody to fill that void, and Scholes came back out of retirement to help United out and still did a very good job. With Fellaini now, have they filled that hole?
Yeah, I think they have because he's somebody who can score goals as well. I mean, you don't get many goals out Cleverley or Carrick. And I think, yeah, he'll give them everything. He's 25 as well. I mean, United don't tend to buy players below the age of 20, sorry, above the age of 27 if they can help it. I think Dimitar Berbatov was an exception to that 5 years ago. And, of course, Robin Van Persie last year. But those players were brought in to provide an instant impact and both did. I think they're prepared to wait for Fellaini to settle in. I mean, he can look a bit unsightly sometimes when he's not on his game. He can look a bit gangly and a little bit uncoordinated. But in general, I think they bought one for the future. I would be surprised if Flay now didn't go on to become one of the key performers at Manchester United over the next 6 or 7 years.
It wasn't the only story, though, and wasn't the only player that Manchester United were linked with yesterday late on. Ander Herrera and Contrao as well at Real Madrid. Sorry, Aidan, just saying that there was the link for Ander Herrera and that deal that was trying to be pushed through by Manchester United with this envoy of people sent out to go and try and make this deal happen. It obviously didn't come to fruition in the end, but it still does raise questions about how they approach the transfer window in general, leaving things very late and in the end running out of time on a couple of deals.
Well, it was. I mean, they ran out of time on two of them, really. I mean, my understanding early in the day is that Tottenham hadn't given up on signing Contrao. They needed a left back, and he was in their mind. So I think I do think that he was available. We've known that he was available throughout the window. So I don't really know what advantage United thought they were going to gain by leaving it so late. Why couldn't they have gone and got him earlier in the window, got him in for pre-season, put some pressure on Patrice Evra, and then who knows? I mean, you might have seen an instant result. You might have seen him settled into the team already. But why? I can only think that teams go for... There are two reasons that affect a team's dealings in the transfer window. If a team decides that they're a bit short of numbers or short of something in the opening weeks of the season, sometimes you have to wait until the first 3 or 4 weeks of the season before you're convinced of what you need. Secondly, and probably more importantly, clubs think they're going to get a good deal on the last day of the window. But historically, if you look at the money, amounts of money that clubs pay on the last day of window, they tend to pay over the odds for players. And I certainly didn't think Arsenal were going to pay £40 million for Mesut Ozil. I'm not saying he's not worth it, but I think if they tried to do the deal earlier, they'd have probably ended up getting him for a little bit less. But that's just speculation, I guess.
On the reverse end of this Fellaini deal, of course, Everton have been able to strengthen very well in the final day of the transfer deadline. They've lost Anicebe and Fellaini, but they've brought in Lukaku, McCarthy, and Gareth Barry. Overall, Everton have come out on top. Do you think, Aidan? Aidan, I was just saying, do you think Everton have come out on top with their transfer dealings on this final day? Hello, Aidan. Apologies there for the technical difficulties. We'll try and get Aidan McGee back from Belgium. Talking about Everton then. But you look at what they've done on the final day, as I say. You know, you bring in Lukaku. Yeah, you bring in James McCarthy and Gareth Barry. You lose a striker and you lose, of course, a midfielder. But you bring in two quality players to replace the midfielder, and you bring in Lukaku, and it's pretty fantastic stuff. I'm hearing that we can't get hold of James McCarthy. We can't get hold of James McCarthy on the show, but we can't get hold of Aidan McGee either at the moment. So we will move on and get our next guest on the show up and running. He's a man who's going to be talking to us all things about the London side of the transfer window and talking about that Lukaku move to Everton. We'll be getting his thoughts on the Chelsea side of things. Joining us today on the show, a man from the Daily Mail who we love having here on World Football Daily. Top bloke indeed, Mr. Sammy Mockbell, joining us on the line today. Sammy, how you doing, man? It must have been an incredibly stressful day. How was it all? I hope you're all okay and not too tired after the big transfer window deadline day.
Yeah, it was pretty hectic, mate. Up at 6, in bed by 1 in the morning, non-stop on the phone, on the computer, making sure you haven't missed anything, trying to keep on top of the big sort of the big London-based deal. So yeah, it was a hectic day, mate, and I just wanted. Kind of today, I just want to sit in a darkened room and lock myself away.
You wouldn't have it any other way, though, would you, Sammy? Surely, I mean, that's the thrill of being a national newspaper journalist on deadline day. Is you got the long day, but you're breaking the news as it comes through.
It's like the journalist's sort of New Year's Day, isn't it?
Yeah,
all that excitement of the day, but then the morning you've got a massive hangover sort of thing, and you just want to lock yourself away. But listen, it's exciting and I think it adds an element. There's been a lot of criticism, particularly from clubs and managers about the transfer window. But I think the day's a massively exciting day for supporters as well. And, you know, it's, the anticipation around it and the excitement on the day is brilliant, I think.
I mean, as a guy that obviously lives earns his living off days like this in football, I mean, do you like the idea of this transfer window? There's been a lot of criticism about the window, about when it closes. Do you think it should be changed in any way, shape or form, Sammy? Should it be finished before the season starts, or should we just leave it, or should we not have it at all?
I think we should have a transfer window. But I tend to agree with it. I know Andre Villas-Boas has been quite vocal in his support of this idea, in that the window should close a day before the season starts. You've got all that time over the summer to sort of to do your ins, to do your outs. I don't know why we need to have, you know, an extra 2 or 3 weeks into the season for clubs to buy additional players. You should have a certain amount of time up until the final day of final day before the start of the season, and that should be it, in my opinion. I know others will disagree.
If AVB didn't like it and didn't like that last minute dealing, though, I mean, should he become Tottenham manager with a guy like Daniel Levy in charge of the transfer policy there? And we know he loves to leave it late. I mean, he's kind of gone to his own worst enemy, if that's his case, though.
Absolutely, but to be fair, I think they've done a lot of. Well, the majority of the business, you know, pretty early on, you know, I think obviously they did sign Eriksen, Lamela, and Chiriches, I think, last week. But a lot of their business they did do fairly early with Garza Soldado, Polinio, Capoue, and Chadli. So I don't think that the transfer window has been as last minute as it has been in the past at Tottenham. And I wonder if AVB's had a bit to do with that.
Yeah, it does make you think how if AVB has said no more of this messing around until the final day. There was still a bit of messing around until the final day. I mean, Tottenham Hotspur's deal's finally gone through. It's all official. He's been paraded out. Sammy, we've been talking about it all summer. I don't want to dwell on it too long, but the Gareth Bale move, just your thoughts briefly. You know, it's easy to do this parading about and be the world's most expensive player, but Bale's now got to get it done, and it's not just off the pitch that's really big. Sorry, on the pitch, it's off the pitch as well. Kind of getting ingrained in that culture and getting yourself happy and settled in a foreign land.
I think his press conference yesterday took not giant steps towards doing that, but I think it was his, you know, sort of first significant progress into sort of, you know, immersing himself into the way of life at Real Madrid. It was interesting. In his comments, obviously, he said Cristiano Ronaldo still remains the number one, you know, the boss of the Bernabeu. And I think that was a very, very good ploy from Bale. Just to ease sort of whatever tensions there could be from Ronaldo towards Bale, just to ease those ever so slightly. And obviously his attempts at speaking Spanish as well would help the fans take to him even more. You know, there was loads of people there tomorrow. I think yesterday, 40,000 odd people at the Bernabeu yesterday. So they've taken to him already. But I think yesterday's press conference would have left him in good stead.
It's Bale's now obviously gone, and Tottenham without him haven't been as impressive as we'd hoped at the start of this season. They've made plenty of purchases, as you say, Sammy, but on the weekend, beaten by Arsenal in the big North London derby, the first one of the season. That's really going to sting for them, especially when Arsenal were really the side going into this under a lot of pressure.
Absolutely. I've seen Tottenham, I think, four times already this season. I saw them on the first day. Win at Crystal Palace. Yes, they won the game for a fairly fortuitous penalty, handball from one of the Palace defenders. And I took a lot of stick from my match report that day from Tottenham fans. I didn't think they had the same fluency and the same sort of cutting edge that they showed last season, and I think that's continued, particularly in the league. I know they beat Dynamo Tbilisi 8-0. On aggregate, but I think my Sunday team could probably give them a run for their money as well. But in the league, they really started to see, you know, that another 1-0 win against Swansea, again another penalty, and again by all, I didn't see that game, but by all reports, They weren't great that day. And then I think he just caught up with them on the bad performances, caught up with them on Sunday. And I was at the game, fortunate enough to be at the game at the Emirates on Sunday. And they just didn't perform. AVB, you know, said, I reckon, in the post-match press conference, they did not dominate the sort of maybe the final 60 minutes of the game. And yes, they had a lot of possession, but I can't, apart from a shot from Jermaine Defoe from the edge of the box that took a deflection, I can't remember one decent opportunity that they created at Emirates Stadium. And at the end, Arsenal should have really won 2-0 or 3-0 by catching them on the break.
For Arsenal, it's been a completely drastic change from what we saw in the opening day of the season. The boos, the hatred coming out from some of these Arsenal fans, and the discomfort about, you know, where's the money being spent. It's gone from strength to strength since then, getting past Fenerbahce and, of course, the win against Tottenham, and now bringing in Mesut Ozil yesterday as well for a huge amount of money. Is it all happy and sunny down at the Emirates suddenly after that first weekend of absolute torture?
I think, listen, if any club was to sign Mesut Ozil, I think it'd be a massive plus and a massive positive for that club. But I think it's important the signing of Ozil not to cloud certain deficiencies that they still have in the squad. They're still really lacking a centre forward, a world class centre forward. And God forbid, what would happen if now if Olivier Giroud picked up an injury? Long-term injury, where would they look to? Maybe Theo Walcott down the middle as a lone striker, but does he really offer you the physical presence that you need, that a lone striker sort of really needs, particularly in the Premier League? So, yes, it's a great signing, but and also look, I think they probably need a sort of a defensive midfield player, a destroyer in there, one that they don't have at the moment. So. Yes, Ozil's been a brilliant signing, and I'm sure he'll go on to become an Arsenal legend. But I still think there's some sort of deficiencies in that squad that they fail to address, and it could end up costing them.
Will people be looking now? Because everybody asks when the big money transfers are going to come in, and now there's this one landmark transfer for them. Smashing their club record of 15.5 million for Rashavin. Does this put even more pressure on Ozil coming in to be great from the get-go? Because this is suddenly the man who Arsenal have spent a lot of money on for the first time. He needs to provide straight away, right?
Yes. Listen, when you arrive at a club for £42.5 million, you haven't got 5 minutes to settle in. You have to hit the ground running, and it's not like they've got you can have a bedding in period. Arsenal has to, at the very least, qualify for the Champions League and for the top four. At the absolute very least, so they can't. A club the size of Arsenal and a club that had the ambitions and the targets that Arsenal do can't carry a player for a season. Despite how good we all know Mesut Ozil is, so he's going to have to hit the ground running. And whether he can do that, we remain to be seen. We only have to cast our mind back, maybe sort of 10, 15 years ago when Dennis Bergkamp arrived at the Highbury, as it was then. He took a while to get going, didn't he? I can't remember how many games it was, but maybe a dozen games to score his first goal. And obviously, he's gone on to become an Arsenal legend. So if he doesn't have a blistering start, there's still massive hope for him.
Is this balance of power that we keep on talking about, just before we get a last few thoughts on Chelsea, Sammy, is this balance of power in North London still with Arsenal? Does this signing shift it straight back to Arsenal being the top dog in the north of the capital?
Tottenham did some great business, I think they signed some very good players. I think Soldado will turn out to be a good signing. But in saying that, even with all the signings that they've made, for me, Arsenal are still, and before Ozil signing, were still the top dogs in North London. History and tradition shows you that. Tottenham would have to do it, to overcome and to overtake Arsenal as North London's top club. They'd have to do it over a sustained period. At the moment, they just haven't done that. But despite the signings, they've still got a lot to prove. And come May, they may have made the top four, and then
moment after Arsenal were pretty much the top dogs over there.
And just finally, Sammy, we do have to discuss a little bit of Chelsea. Obviously, the final deadline day had them involved in as well, but plenty of departures from Chelsea. Romelu Lukaku off to Everton on loan. Are you surprised that of all the strikers that have left Chelsea now this summer, it's Lukaku that is the one that's been shifted out?
Very much. I am, actually. I'm very surprised, actually. I was away with Chelsea in the summer over in the States, and all the talk then was Lukaku was going to be, you know, Mourinho's number one striker. So I find it very odd that Mourinho must have seen something in him and, you know, just not fancied him to let him go, because they were very close to letting Demba Ba go to Arsenal last night, but at the last minute pulled the plug on it, brought him back, and allowed Lukaku to go to Everton. So only time will tell whether that's the right decision. But I have to say, I did find it greatly surprising.
Was Bart on his way up to Arsenal then to get that deal sorted?
Everything was in place. Yeah, the medical was in place, mate. They thought the deal was done, and then at the very last minute, it's an exaggeration, but late into the day. Chelsea decided they didn't want to do that. They didn't want to do that deal, which in turn obviously angered Arsenal, because they would have had no time to try and secure another deal for a striker. And as we mentioned earlier, desperately in need of even a backup striker, because if Giroud was to get injured, then they have literally no options. Because even Podolski's out injured at the moment. It looks like he's going to be out for the rest of the year. So. The decision wasn't sort of greatly received, shall we say, at Arsenal last night.
And of course, Lukaku wasn't played in that Manchester United against Chelsea game at Old Trafford on the Monday night. He's only featured as a sub, and he was told that in the summer that if he came back to Chelsea, he would be given that opportunity. That's why he didn't push for a loan move away initially. Is there a chance that one of the hottest talents in terms of a guy that we've seen already perform in the Premier League at such a young age, is there a chance that he's going to become disenfranchised with this Chelsea team as a whole and want to make a permanent move away?
I would have thought, yes, mate. Mourinho had a good look at him. He's had the whole of pre-season. He's had the opening few weeks of this season. Yeah, he hasn't gone with him. If Mourinho really fancied him, he would have stopped. It's not like Chelsea at the moment are blessed with forward talent. Yes, they've got Torres, but Torres just hasn't cut it at Chelsea so far. Bar hasn't virtually featured at all. So you would have thought Lukaku would have been the one to start, but he hasn't even started him. So while Mourinho's there, I just don't see Lukaku having a future at Chelsea at the moment.
Who's your number one striker at Chelsea then at the moment? Is it Torres, is it Bar, or is it Eto?
Very good question. I think he's going to go with Eto. But he obviously doesn't fancy Bar. They were ready to loan him out yesterday, but pulled the plug on it last minute. Torres doesn't seem to me that Mourinho quite has the trust in him that maybe he should. So, yeah, Eto. And the thing with Eto as well, Mourinho and Eto worked together, didn't they, at Inter Milan? So he knows what he's getting, and they've got that relationship. So I think that could be the way forward. I think that could be the way that Mourinho goes.
Sammy, it's a very peculiar situation down at Chelsea, relying now on the elder statesman Samuel Eto'o. We'll be dipping in and out throughout the season with you to see how it's all taking place in London. It's definitely a place to keep your eye on in terms of Premier League football at the moment. And there's so many storylines left to pan out. We look forward to catching up with you later on in the season, mate. But thank you so much for taking some time out. And we hope that you get some rest now today and get a chance to recuperate in time for obviously all the internationals coming up. And then the Champions League and Premier League getting back underway as we get into September.
Thanks, Ollie. Cheers, mate.
Cheers, Sammy. Thanks so much for joining us. Mr. Sammy Mockbell from the Daily Mail joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things transfer window and deadline day from yesterday and all things in the London area. Arsenal with Mesut Ozil. We'll be talking about that a little later on, and Tottenham as well, stumbling against Arsenal at the Emirates. Still a difficult place to go, the Emirates. You know, Villa played extremely well on that opening day of the season and played Arsenal. Arsenal played into their hands with that. Arsenal starting to come good, though.